Sorry, just rearranging my screen. So this was the Silver Jubilee. Queen Elizabeth II has been on the throne for 25 years. And there was a certain amount of doubt in the run-up to it how much we should celebrate, because various elements of British society maybe weren't, it wasn't all going amazingly well. The economy was not great. Race relations, industrial relations, not necessarily great. But it was felt that a big royal event would be a good thing, pull the nation together, perhaps. And if you've seen the recent series of The Crown, which I must admit I'm a bit adrift, so I haven't, but I was watching a little bit relating to this, and I think it's Princess Margaret who says, you know, you will bring the nation together. That's what you're for. And on the day, thousands of people turned out to celebrate the Queen's Jubilee. Some of them had street parties. 10 million people across Britain had took part in a street party. There were 5,000 street parties in London alone. And we bonfires were lit across the country. We had last used for the arrival of the Spanish Armada, a chain of beacons, there we go, across the country, lit by first one by the Queen. And we acquired a permanent reminder of the Jubilee in London in the shape of the Jubilee, the Silver Jubilee walkway, which on the pavements is marked with these plaques on the left, and then we have a three-dimensional one in Parliament Square. And the walkway covers a 15-mile loop. In fact, five separate loops, but joining up in central London. And it really is central London. When you look at this map, it's such a tiny proportion of the area of Greater London that the walkway covers. But it is the walkway that will be our guide this evening as we trace our way around 1970s London. And on each of those five loops, you'll be excited to hear we have got an architectural gem to enjoy. So this is loop one, and we are going to make our way down from Trafalgar Square round down here to Parliament Square to start with. And if you want an idea of what politics was like in the 1970s, then absolutely my top recommendation is to try and see this. This house by James Graham was a National Theatre production in 2012, I think, originally, but it's had various tours. And it was live screened, or not live screened, but screened recently. So it might still be available online somewhere. And it's set in the Whip's Office of Parliament, starting in the Hung Parliament of 1974, and going actually right through until the 1979 election. And even after we had two elections in 1974, one that had a sort of a minority elections, there was no one in overall control, it was a sort of coalition of parties. And then in October 74, another election where Labour gets a slim majority. But really throughout that parliament, every vote counted, and every vote the whips were making sure everyone was in the house to vote. And if you don't have a big majority, it's very hard to get kind of anything really decisive done. And politics was quite slow, quite kind of stagnated, if you like. The same thing was kind of going on across the river in County Hall, home of the Greater London Council, which had been set up in 1965, taking over from the old London County Council, and was just really finding its feet in the 1970s. And London had grown. So on this map, we have the old London County Council area in white in the middle, and then the coloured boroughs are the ones that joined into Greater London in 1965. And there was a huge overlap of kind of responsibilities. So in terms of education, the Greater London Council looked after the inner London boroughs in white through a body known as ILEA, the Inner London Education Authority. But the outer boroughs each looked after their own education. In housing, each local borough and the GLC both had responsibility to provide housing. And so in some cases, they were fighting over building plots for new housing developments. In transport, In 1970, the GLC gets control of public transport in London, but parking is organised by each individual borough, and trunk roads are the responsibility of the Minister for Transport. So there's all these different kind of interests at stake in pretty much any decision that's made. And also, the inner London boroughs were broadly more Labour, whereas the outer London boroughs broadly more Conservative. And that meant that there was all sorts of sort of party political wranglings and mistrust going on all the time. And for a long time, the GLC had a policy of encouraging people to move out of London. London, they thought, was overcrowded, particularly in the inner London boroughs. And so they encouraged both people, residential and businesses, to move out. In 1977, still there was an advert on the tube saying, move out of London before the business costs strangle your business, you know. At which point they realised that actually it was getting a bit empty, so maybe they didn't need that policy anymore. But people moving out either into new towns like Milton Keynes and things, or into the outer London boroughs, which was viewed with great suspicion by these outer London boroughs, who think, hang on, here's a load of Labour voters being shifted out into our sort of naturally Conservative area. That's going to upset all the balance of power locally. This is politically driven policy and all the rest of it. So the GLC was a really slow, sluggish, sort of ineffective system of government in a way, because of the way it was set up in its early days. A little bit down the river from the GLC, we have our very first architectural gem of the 1970s. And I'm afraid we haven't got a jingle. I feel we need a jingle to go with that effect. But this is, of course, the National Theatre. And it was opened in 1976. The National Theatre Company had been in existence since the 60s, but they were using the old Vic until this purpose-built theatre space was ready for them. And one of the things I love about it is that it tells you what it is. It doesn't hide, you know, the function is clearly visible. Most theatres have a fly tower. If you have scenery that goes in and out, if you have a big curtain at front, you need a fly tower. And most West End theatres have them, but they're kind of hidden behind the elegant facade and they're, you know, in amongst other buildings, so you just don't see them. Here, you can see on the structure of the building, these two top sections, those are the fly towers, so you know where the auditorium are. This is for the Olivier, which is a sort of Greek amphitheatre shaped space, the largest of the spaces here. This one is for the Littleton, which is a sort of end-on proscenium theatre, so quite kind of traditional, like I guess quite a few of the West End theatres, more or less, that model. And then there's also the studio theatre space, which was for a long time the Cottesloe, now known as the Dorfman, and that is a kind of Jacobean courtyard theatre space with very flexible seating. So you have these three quite distinct spaces, almost tracing the development of theatre space through the ages. And look, doesn't it look nice in the evenings as well when it's lovely lit up? And look, doesn't it look nice in the daytime too? And you've got these really nice crisp lines made by the, on a sunny day, by the light and the shadow. And it's a concrete building. Brutalist, you know, big slabs, heavy, chunky building. And yet it's quite playful because of the sheer array of different spaces that you get inside. And these, you know, you've got different galleries and sort of balcony spaces. You get the different sort of bits of glimpses of the windows that you see inside. And you can start to see the texture here of the created by the shuttering. So here inside, looking at these two foyer spaces, you can see really clearly the wood grain that is still visible on these poured concrete panels. And if you think about a medieval cathedral, you build it with a wooden form, and then you put the stone over the top, you make a nice arch. As soon as the arch is solid, you take the wood away and the wood leaves no trace. And quite rightly, we remember the stonemasons who worked in our cathedrals, but we tend to forget about the carpenters without whom they couldn't have been made. Here, the building tells the story of its own construction, because the wooden kind of, you know, form has left its imprint on the concrete. And I love as well the way you get these, again, inside, these little sort of glimpses of vistas through these quite, I mean, it is in some sense quite a confusing building to find your way around, perhaps, but quite an exciting building to be in. And if you are looking out, there's all these different windows, different angles, and some of them are quite interesting shapes as well. And you're looking out across the river. Dennis Lasden said it has four auditoriums, and the fourth one is London. And he designed the building so that we could look out and see London performing in front of us.